Welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today I'm going to continue our three-part interview with James Barkley. We're going to have one part for everybody, and then we're going to continue on part three with information for members only. We're going to be talking about a lot of interesting topics, such as how to telephone experiences training, the drugs and technology used, how to counter effects of that, how to prevent abductions. We're going to be talking about screen memories, how the mind is interrogated, and also some of the missing parts of abductions that we don't think about. We also have some very interesting topics beyond that for our members as well, or for everybody if we have enough time. So without further ado, welcome, James.
Thank you, Dean. Pleased to be here. Looking forward to this interview.
So, James, let's start off with how you can tell if an experience is training and how you can tell if it's a my lab type training or a spiritual type training or something like that.
What I would say is that the military type training can be quite blatant, where you're being taught military tactics, you're in the presence of what seem to be military people, you may be wearing uniforms, you may be conducting training in physical fitness or swimming or running or weapons training. You may be taught survival skills to survive in any kind of contingency here on Earth. And I would contrast that with the training dreams that some of us have, where we have a dream, and in this dream, we have this innate knowingness, this innate understanding of how to utilize our innate abilities, our latent abilities. For example, my labs and abductees have described scenarios where they find themselves in the presence of children, and this could be on board what appears to be a craft. It could be a classroom setting. It could be an installation. The settings vary. And the individual will be showing the children how to manifest energy out of their hands, how to create geometric patterns of energy out of their hands, how to move objects with energy out of their hands or through telekinesis, through the power of the mind. Or they can be showing groups of children how to fly, right? And some people would write these off as just fanciful dreams, but I feel that it's perhaps our oversoul, our higher self, showing us that this is really happening. What you perceive as a dream where you're teaching children how to manifest energy out of their hands and how to fly, at some level you really can do this, and at some aspect of creation, you really have done that. So the dreams that you remember are actual representations of what really occurred, but on a higher level of awareness, higher dimension, if you will.
And do you think all these things that happen are abductions, or are some like some kind of oversoul agreement we have, or how does this all work?
I believe that some of it is not an abduction. I believe some of it is that at an oversoul level, there are times when and where this extra boost of energy comes from, whether it's innate, something that we draw through us at some subconscious level, I don't know. But there are times when it seems our oversoul gives us that little extra oomph, that little extra boost of power that allows us to consciously operate in higher dimensions, in higher planes of existence, if you will. So I don't believe that it's all abduction related. Now, there are times when ETs, both positive and negative ETs, will train us. The negative ETs have been known to train people to fly craft, to operate alien weaponry, to operate alien computer systems, et cetera, et cetera. And conversely, beings that we perceive to be positive or spiritually evolved have likewise taught us. And on board some of these craft and in some of these what seem to be ET settings, the teachers may not just be ETs. They could be Native American spirit elders, but the setting is like an alien environment. It could be like it looked like a classroom, or it could look like a space on board of a craft. But the teacher seems to be a Native American elder or Aboriginal elder, whatever the case may be. So it varies. But I would contrast those two examples with what our own higher self is showing us. Because at times, and there must be some coordination liaison with friendly ET elements, because we wind up in some of these settings, which are safe havens, at least for the time being, where we're able to train and teach others. And these, in large part, for most people anyway, these are abilities that we cannot actually manifest in our normal waking consciousness under normal circumstances. But in this other plane of existence, this other alternate reality, if you will, we seem to have these abilities, and we seem to be, in our own right, regarded as teachers. And so that's why we find ourselves sometimes teaching children and teaching, you know, classrooms with people that pretty much appear to be our own age, right? So that's going on as well. I really believe that those examples of teaching, not where we're just being instructed, where we're sitting there with students, but when we're doing the teaching, I believe those are real.
Now, I've heard that when people get abducted, drugs are used, and not just injected drugs, but electronic devices, beaming, things like that. So what are some of the drugs and devices used? And is there any kind of way to counter that?
The drugs that have been introduced into people, alien abductees from ETs, they run the gamut. I mean, they're often described as like fluids being injected into people, into their arms, and into their kneecap area. Sometimes the device utilized looks like a hypodermic, what we would perceive to be a hypodermic needle or something like it. Other times tubes are stuck into us in like around our kneecap area, into our arms, different parts of our anatomy. The fluids that have been put into alien abductees, they vary in appearance. One commonly reported, I don't know how common it is, you know, small sample size to be sure, but people have described this to me, kind of a green fluid that is being inserted into somebody, introduced into somebody, sometimes around the kneecap area or other parts of the anatomy. And I think the intended effect is that it really makes people ill, because people report after being injected with this green fluid by what appear to be the grays, in some instances, they become very ill, like different major organs begin to shut down, and they're getting close to, you know, getting to the end. And on one occasion, a friend of mine had to go on a 2-week fast in order to divest himself of whatever this substance was that was injected into him. And gradually he became better and got well, but it was a process. And we've talked about the near-death experience. We've talked about the soul harvesting experience. I've had an experience where me and a few other abductees in my labs that I used to have group experiences and group training with back in the day, we were in a group abduction by the Greys. And my friend, who retains a high level of conscious awareness during some of her experiences, she asked the Grey, you know, what are you guys doing to us? What are you doing? And the Grey told her, we're bringing you as close as possible to the near-death experience, to the death experience, right? And so that was the reason, at least the stated reason, that they gave us those drugs to put us in the state where we're on the verge of dying, but not, you know, not quite. I don't know what the purpose behind that is. Maybe it's a way for them to you know, prep people in the future if they want to recycle them. You know, if we do our job right, that won't happen. But that's at least what they told us at the time, that we're bringing you as close as possible to the near-death state, to the death state, for whatever purpose.
Now, James, do you know of any way that people can counteract the effect of some of these drugs and some of these electronic devices that get used against them?
Yes. Our bodies undergo a lot of depletion as far as essential minerals and enzymes and what have you are concerned anyway. And then when we have these alien abduction experiences, the depletion rate increases, I think, exponentially. So what we need to do is make sure that we have our B and C vitamins, that we have magnesium, that I like to drink green superfood drinks, alkalizing green superfood drinks, chlorella, barley grass mix, spirulina, etc., to keep our body chemistry at a good alkalizing level. That way we don't provide the means for these infections to take place. It's not unusual for people that have a lot of ET experiences to have all these maladies and illnesses and just be chronically sick all the time. Because, like I said, these minerals and whatnot are depleted from us. Also, like I said, magnesium is important, because one byproduct of these experiences that my mentor, Barbara Bartholik, discovered is we have our magnesium within our bodies depleted. And so this manifests itself in painful cramps and whatnot. So from that standpoint, we can make sure we take the right minerals and we alkalize our body and we eat food that's real food and not processed, dangerous, toxic food. We drink clean water, lots of it. And from a frequency standpoint, I would really recommend people to wear jewelry and have protective devices. This is a frequency war, so shungite pendants are very effective, tensor coil pendants, certain crystals, right? And people should be aware, if they like to wear quartz, that's all well and good, but quartz not only holds information, but it holds energetic frequencies too. So if you're being electromagnetically beamed, or the ETs and or the military are beaming you with certain frequencies, the quartz crystals may enhance that effect. So, you know, you're better off with something that's grounding, that keeps you embodied, that makes it more difficult to be astrally abducted, to be astrally hijacked. So things like hematite bracelets, hematite necklaces, hematite anklets, everything that can kind of ground you and keep you embodied is very good, and provide a very healthy energetic field around you. Amber is also very good in that regard.
Now, for our viewers and listeners who aren't into vitamins and supplements, what you want to do also is treat this as an extreme stress and possibly something where you can't sleep. So, for example, when you're under extreme stress, you lose almost all the minerals and vitamins. So when you use magnesium, you want to use it on your skin or put it in your bathtub, because you can absorb a lot more. Some other important things is the antioxidants, like if you have astaxanthin, resveratrol, vitamin C, vitamin E, stuff to boost glutathione and superoxide dismutase. So all of the antioxidants, magnesium is vitally important, and you can really get through these stressful situations with a minimal impact on your body and your health. Anytime you're undergoing any kind of cramping, you know you're low on magnesium, and magnesium will help you a lot. In a future show, we can talk more about that, but let's get back to what we were talking about before. So as far as preventing this stuff, is there anything you can do during the actual experience energetically or any other method that can actually prevent the abduction experience?
The best time to prevent the abduction experiences at the outset of an abduction experience. When you begin to feel that paralysis kick in, that's the best time where you tell yourself, stay conscious. And for example, I know, you know, I'm not a fundamentalist Christian, okay? But I know even in my own case, when I've invoked certain names and even one time through chattering teeth, I think it was a 39th Psalm or a 23rd Psalm. I get them mixed up, but it was the one, yea, through the valley of the shadow of death, et cetera, et cetera. I found myself laying at a table surrounded by these funny looking beings in a dark space. And I just kept repeating that verse over and over and over. And if someone were to challenge me to repeat that verse now, I could not do it, because it's not in my conscious memory. But for whatever reason, at that particular moment, when I found myself in an abduction experience and I was on a table surrounded by these funny entities, these funny looking entities, suddenly out of nowhere, I knew the words to the verse, and I kept reciting it through chattering teeth because I was so frightened, stuttering and chattering teeth. And I just kept repeating it over and over. Eventually they sent me back, and I was still repeating it over and over and over. And then it slowly dawned on me that I was back in my regular bed, right? So whether one is religious or not, there seems to be some power when, you know, when we're in a high emotional state and we're reaching out for a higher power than ourselves to help us, that works too, okay? So, but the important thing is, because their mind control technology is so potent, and they have the ability to just shunt us into a deep state of sleep, we need to pay attention to the warning signs, what have been described as the prodromal feelings, where in the, you know, as nighttime gets closer, we begin to feel like we're being watched. We could start to hear tones or frequencies in our head. Some reptilians, when they start to tune into the person they're about to abduct or have an encounter with, the person can sometimes hear tones and frequencies. Now, I know a lot of people say, oh, that's proof of the military. No, not necessarily. There's this knee-jerk reaction, everything's the military. No, that's Richard Boylan nonsense, right? But some ETs and some reptilians in particular, when they're tuning into somebody prior to abducting them or having an encounter with them, the person can hear high-pitched tones or squeals or beeps in their head or in the left ear. So we just have to pay attention to those warning signs, right? If we start to feel agitated, anxious, as nighttime, you know, beckons and gets closer, that may be a sign that we're going to have an encounter that night. So we just have to prepare ourselves. And like I said, the frequencies, it's a frequency war. So if you have things like hematite, if you have things like tensor rings, I have huge tensor rings, hoops around me pretty much all the time when I'm home. And that does provide some degree of frequency protection.
I've heard that people who get abducted often have screen memories and don't remember what really happened. And when they get abducted, that they have layers and layers of screen memories. So how does somebody who gets abducted know what the real scenario is and what's screen memories? And once they get past one screen memory, how do they know there's not another one, or if that's the real experience?
That's a very good point. There are some that would have you believe, the David Jacobs types, for example, that, well, they're all medical procedures. Everything is a medical procedure. Every regression always yields an abduction out of one's car on a motorway, being taken out of their bedroom, et cetera, and then they always wind up where it's a medical procedure on board of a small rounded craft, and it's very cold inside. It's kind of a cut and dry generic thing. Nothing could be further from the truth. I found out a long time ago, and I had discussions with Barbara Bartholik about this because she talked about this a lot, that there are usually at least two screen memories. One screen memory for the abductee himself or herself, and then a second screen memory for the hypnotic regressionist, right? And so if the person wants to get regressed to find out what really happened to him or her, what often, if anything, what often comes up is the generic cut and dried medical procedure. And you see, that medical procedure could have been done. It could have been done, you know, a few times or a number of times in the person's past, and not just in this aspect of reality either. But what the ETs can cleverly do is embed one of those memories of these medical procedures, layer it in as a second layer to fool the regressionist. So the regressionist puts someone in under hypnosis, and then out comes this generic standard medical procedure type experience. And well, that's not always the case. Sometimes a lot more happens than just the medical procedures. A lot of experiences happen right in one's own bedroom, where they're not even abducted, not even taken away, not even brought up to a craft or brought to an ET installation. Some of the stuff, some of the medical procedures, some of the instances when entities, Dracos are known for this, literally reach into somebody's body or their chest cavity or their stomach and move around with their clawed hands, right? Those things happen, and they happen right in someone's bedroom. So, you know, I don't want to belabor the point, but it's important to remember that this notion that the medical procedures are the be-all and the end-all, and that's it, it's all just, you know, one big hybrid agenda, and there's nothing else to it. No, that's a fallacy. There's a lot more to it than that. So if we take that as a baseline model, that there's usually at least two screens, one for the abductee and one for the regressionist, that's something that we can work off of and what we can build off of. What these ETs do is they're masters at creating these illusions where one can, and here's an example. I was told this by a close friend, where he was on a beach setting. It was a beach setting, like a little cove, you know, between two headlands. And, you know, there was a group of people on this beach, men and women. And then after a while, they began pairing off, the males and the females, and having intercourse together. Well, for some reason, this illusion didn't work on this friend of mine. He kind of snapped out of it and realized that, yeah, these people are having sex all right, but this is not a beach. This is some kind of, we're at some place, like an installation, like in human terms, it would be like a soundstage. It would be like a stage set, right? And then he confronted the ETs noticed that he wasn't buying into the illusion, and they kind of try to reel him back in and make him fall for the illusion. And they were kind of confounded why he wouldn't slip back into the beach setting and, you know, get into all the intercourse everyone else was. They even tried to adjust the technology that they were utilizing on everyone else to try to make him buy into or see into the illusion and buy into it, but it wouldn't work on him. So he became so disruptive, they eventually just sent him back because they still had all these other people to work with. Another illusion that some of the ETs use is what's been described as a black projector, where the ETs, some of them, will manipulate you in more than one reality. If they can't manipulate you in this reality, they'll take you into an alternate reality. And this alternate reality could look a lot like your own reality. It could look a lot like your own house, your own bedroom, but there could be slight or even radical differences in the furniture, in the way the house is furnished, in the way the house is laid out, in the way that the furnishing is laid out, in the photographs or the pictures. There could be slight or radical differences. So what they try to do is to get you to go along with this illusion. Well, it looks like my house, so I guess I'm just either dreaming about my own house or I'm really in my own house, but it's not really your house. And so for whatever reason, sometimes they feel the need to put people in these alternate realities that look pretty much like our own but are not, and they try to manipulate us in those realities, right? And sometimes what's been described as this black projector looking thing above the bed of this alternate reality setting, the abductee can momentarily come to or momentarily have a moment of, you know, conscious awareness, look up and see this black projector, and then he realizes or she realizes that this black projector is part of this, creating this illusion that's around them, making them think that they're in their own house, although they don't have the details quite right. Like in my own case, I know that there have been many times, and I'm probably not unique in this, but that certain places have a deep resonance and a meaning to us. Like when I lived in San Jose, California, I had a lot of ET experiences back then. And so to this day, I find myself in these stage managed dreams where I'm supposed to be back in that house in San Jose, even though I hadn't been there for many decades. That's where I was pretty much when I was a kid. But, you know, I moved away from there a long time ago. But because of the familiarity and the special place it holds within me, and frankly, a lot of the fear that I experienced because I went through a lot of ET experiences there at the time, they will use that setting, even though it may not look exactly like the house I lived in San Jose, because it sets a tone. It sets kind of a vibe. Oh, I'm back in this house in San Jose where I had all these ET experiences, right? So they'll use settings, they'll use locales that we're familiar with, but also has a strong emotional content too.
Now, I've heard from people who have been abducted that their abductors tell them that they're being abducted for the good of the human race, or they're trying to save the gene pool or stuff like that. Can somebody who's abducted believe the aliens that are abducting them all the time?
Yeah, forgive me. I almost coughed up all that water I was just drinking when I heard that, because that's one of the most commonly promoted fallacies of this whole Space Brothers thing. Like the ETs are always here. All the ETs are always here to do what's best for humanity. And no, I just find that to be a sick joke, because some of these ETs are so exploitive. They're so callous and indifferent to the suffering of the people that they're using as subjects, right? They don't care how much damage they do to us physically, emotionally, even spiritually. If they were so benevolent and so good, why didn't they fix this planet already? Why do we still have all these wars? Why is there still a controlling faction, a Draco reptilian overlords working through all these hybridized bloodlines to create all this chaos and mayhem here on this planet? And why is it still like a soul recycling harvesting center, right? If these ETs are so good, or at least some of them that claim to be, right, we have to ask ourselves, you know, why haven't they done all this stuff? So, you know, that old biblical saying, by their fruits ye shall know them, I think that that's a, you know, for me, that's, you know, check the fruit on the tree, right? If what they do is essentially harmful to you, right? We see this all the time with New Agers, where they talk constantly, and everything to a New Ager is spiritual. Everything is esoteric. Everything is about raising your vibrations. But I can just tell looking at them and feeling their vibe and looking in their eyes that some of these people, they've been traumatized. These warm and fuzzy ETs that they keep talking about have done them serious harm, right? And so, no, I don't buy for a second this notion that all these ETs are here for our greater good. And, you know, that much being said, we have to look at it in the grand scheme of things, right? And this is but one planet, you know, in a cosmos filled with innumerable planets, innumerable star systems. So I do believe that what's going on here is of critical importance for the, you know, ultimate evolution of our galaxy and our plane of existence, because there's so many souls here. There's so much access to DNA here, and, you know, there's latent metaphysical powers within certain DNA bloodlines, if you will. So, and those can be utilized, the DNA and the metaphysical powers contained in the DNA. it could be used as a tool. It could be used as a weapon system, basically, right? So there's a lot going on here, and I don't mean to minimize that, but you know, we need to see more action, you know, from these ETs that are always talking about how spiritually evolved they are, right? And this at the same time, we can't wait for them. We got to work and operate as if it depends on us. We cannot assume that there's going to be these beings that are going to pull our chestnuts out of the fire. We have to assume that it's up to us and us alone.
Now, we've just heard about the deceptive ETs that try and fool us. Are there some that are good and are trying to help us and teach us and hopefully save us from ourselves?
Yes. And I say that not only because I hope so and I want it to be so, but I really feel in discussions with really switched on people, there are beings and civilizations that want us to break out of this prison matrix. In truth, at least some of us are descended from some of these higher dimensional ET civilizations. And I've talked about this many times before. We're spawned from just more than just one ET civilization. Like Alex Collier points out, we're the product of, he says, from the Andromedan perspective, the Andromedans he's in contact with, 22 different ET races, the DNA profile within us average humans, right? So, I mean, that's a lot of diversity, to use a term that's, you know, we're being hammered over the head with these days. And, you know, they are our extended star family. And we are boots on the ground. We've decided to, you know, volunteer, do the hard yards here on the surface, be in physical embodiment, and anchor these higher frequencies. And that's a tough job. And the beings that, you know, we're descended from, they know the nature of the work we're doing here. They have an idea of just how difficult it is for us, right? And so some of them have a vested interest in some abductees and myelabs and contactees, because in truth, those people are descended from these higher dimensional ETs. So yes, I do believe that some of these beings do want us to spiritually evolve and break away from this prison matrix. Barbara Marciniak often talks about how at least the Palladians that are working through her and she's channeling, they talk about how they have their own karma to undo because of their own misdeeds and their own interference way back when. They've caused all these problems, not just for us, but they've caused problems for themselves. So they're doing what they can to rectify, to undo these problems, because, you know, it's, they have a vested interest in doing so because it's beneficial for them, right? We have to look at it from that standpoint. It's like, it's not just what's good for us, right? It's also what's good for these other ETs and you know, throughout the galaxy and throughout the cosmos, right? But at the same time, we cannot, you know, just be sitting around here with a beggar's bowl and expect all these ETs to do all this work for us. We've got to do a lot of the work ourselves. That's why we're here. We're the boots on the ground. We're the ground crew. Someone has to do it, right? Someone has to be here in physical embodiment and do this kind of work. But like I said, that's just what's outwardly being done. You know, those people that do podcasts and do interviews and give lectures and write blogs, some of them, many of them, are doing these things we talked about. At some higher state of being, they're teaching children how to work with energy. They're teaching, you know, children how to fly. They're, you know, conversant in all these ancient ET star languages, and they're beginning to remember them. I think that the training, that's just to go back to an earlier point we were making, the training isn't only for whoever is being taught, in our example, children, but it's also for the teachers themselves, reminding them, hey, it's like you have all these innate capabilities. You've taught people and you've taught children at many different levels of existence and in many different dimensions, right? It's kind of a remembrance of who we are. And so if we can, you know, hang on to that, remember that, you know, this system teaches us we're just body bags, that we're just blood bags, that we're, you know, shame-based, you know, worthless beings. We're so much more. And when we get to that level of understanding, not in an egocentric way, but recognize that, you know, we are worthy, and we are worthy of doing this great work, and we can pull it off. Indeed, that's why we came here, right? And we have air support, but we can't be overly dependent on them. I believe all these programs, so to speak, mission programs, are unfolding and unlocking within people, and they're remembering at some level, in a higher dimensional state level, what they need to do. Okay, so I believe that's going on. And this whole training thing is part of that, where they're being trained and they're remembering their innate capabilities, but they're also training others and training children.
One topic that interests a lot of people, and I haven't seen a huge amount of information on this, is the dream hijacking and the stage managed dreams. Can you tell me about some of the techniques they use for that, what they do, how they do it, and also how to protect yourself from that?
I touched on an aspect of that a moment ago, where I talked about how they like to bring back familiar settings from our past, whether it's a home that we spent a lot of time in, a work environment, a workplace, and they're trying to set a tone. Because not only do they want to put you into a stage managed dream setting that, you know, puts you in a certain frame of mind, certain state of being, sometimes they'll put you in a setting that elicits anxiety on your part, right? Let me give you a classic example of that. We humans, or most of us anyway, we tend to be clean freaks. We like relatively clean living, work environments. Most of us anyway tend to practice good personal hygiene. So what some of these ETs do is they put us in settings and scenarios which are disgusting and filthy, right? I mean, for example, where you'll find yourself in these dream hijacks, stage managed dreams, in places where, whether you're indoors or outdoors, there's feces all over the place. And you're either barefoot or you're wearing socks. And there'll be not only feces, but there'll be urine all over the place too. So you have to find your way around all this stuff. And sometimes there's no route. You just, you know, find yourself walking along, walking through all this urine and all this other stuff. And it's disgusting, and it puts you ill at ease. It puts you in a state of high anxiety and frustration. Another infamous, notorious example of this, these disgusting scenarios, is the toilet dreams, right? Now, there are times when alien abductees and or my labs may find themselves in a setting where they're in a large communal bathroom type place, right? Where someone will walk into an all-male or an all-female bathroom setting where the toilets will be side by side. There are no separators. There are no stalls. People just sitting there, and one will be sitting there and like, what am I doing here? You know, why is there no toilet paper? I don't even feel like I have to go. They're just sitting there on these toilets. Okay, that happens too. Sometimes in an all-female setting, for example, a guy would walk in all zombied out, realize, oh, geez, they're all women, and then they'll turn around, walk out, things like that. But what they do, a variation of that, is I talked a moment ago about how, like, there'd be feces all over the place or urine all over the place on the floors. There's the toilet setting, right, where they're standing there in a bathroom, and they're confronted with this toilet that is overflowing, that needs to be fixed. So they find themselves in this scenario, and it's one of those scenarios where the task is impossible. And that's the whole point. It's a frustration, anxiety-inducing scenario where they'll be standing in this bathroom and they're barefoot or they're wearing socks, and there's like brown feculent liquid on the floor. The toilet is overflowing, and you know, you're trying to shut the water off. You're trying to flush it. You're trying to fix it, but you can't. And it's, you know, very aggravating. And then you wake up from it and you go, oh, that was a horrific dream, you know. And then pretty soon, what they do is they begin beaming you to induce beaming the parts of your brain that induces the very sleepy feeling. And then soon you're asleep and whammo, you're back in this scenario where you're standing in this bathroom and then there's like dirty, feculent brown water on the floor and then there's things floating around in the toilet. And now you've got like a big red wrench in your hand, right? And you get this idea that you're supposed to fix this thing. Now, instead of just like things floating around in the toilet and dirty water on the floor, now water, you know, feculent brown water is shooting out of this toilet all over you, into your mouth, all over your hair, all over your face. And you're just standing there and you're in a state of utter frustration. Remember, most of us tend to be clean freaks, right? And so when we're put in these scenarios, in these environments that are off-putting, that put us ill at ease, that puts us in a state of mind, a state of being, which suits their purposes, which allows them to manipulate us, right? And there are endless variations of what I just described. And then you're just there in real time. Time is passing really slowly. And now all this, you know, water and other things are just shooting out of this toilet and you can't do anything about it. And now you've got this big red, you know, wrench and but you don't know what to do and anything you try doesn't work anyway. So that's an example. And there's variations of this too where adjoining some of these dirty bathroom scenes, there could be like a locker room setting. And likewise, it'll be a very dirty locker room. There'll be rows and rows of lockers. Think about, the locker rooms in high school or college where you go in there and you change into your PE clothes, your physical education clothes. Again, they utilize images and settings which are familiar to us, but with a twist, okay? So the purpose behind these is to put you in a certain state of being. And one more point I want to make before we move on to the next question is it puts you in a suggestible state a lot of times when you're in these settings which seem familiar, which they'll use from our past. And for example, if you've had an experience at a workplace where you had a bullying coworker or you had a bullying boss or there was a lot of negative toxic stuff going on, one could find himself in a work environment in a stage managed hijacked dream that reminds the individual of a place where they had all these issues at work. And then they may even reel out individuals that look exactly like or remind you of some of these people you had problems with, a bullying coworker, a bullying boss, an intriguing, manipulative coworker, whatever the case may be. And the idea is to get you to go along with it, to agree to things, to submit to interrogation, because in the midst of these dreams, these off-putting dreams, whether it's, you know, a very disgusting, dirty place or it's like a hostile work environment setting, they ask you questions, right? And what they'll do also is if you have in your conscious mind, whether or not you actually verbalize these things, if you have fears, misgivings, phobias, they will wheel these things out in these stage managed dreams, hijacked dreams. If you don't like bugs, you know, you'll see big, huge cockroaches scurrying along the walls. You'll see spiders. You'll see, you know, and then they'll combine things where there could be a lot of filthy, disgusting things on the floor, but there'll be big bugs scurrying around. And they'll use archetypal images.
Unfortunately, we've ran out of time on this segment of the interview. So on the next side of the interview, we'll be talking about how to protect yourself from all of this. But what I wanted to say is if you like what we're doing, if you find it interesting, please share it, send it to your friends, hit the like button, subscribe, or even give us your feedback because we want to know what interests you, what you want to see, and we want to tailor the show to our audience. So it's very important that we get your feedback. So thank you for listening, and please continue to listen next week or on the next segment of this interview. Thank you.
Thank you.